Welcome to Locked On Heat. On today's show, we open up the mailbag to discuss if the Heat should extend Justice Winslow's contract or risk him leaving next summer.
Then we'll discuss how the Heat can imitate the Warriors and if Pat Riley deserves some of the recent criticism pointed his way. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the Heat and the NBA for FanSided. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Romillo, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat and league at large for SB Nation and FanSided. You can follow me in my writing on Twitter at DRomill13.
We're opening up the mailbag today, and we'll talk about Miami's version of the Hamptons Five and if Pat Riley is indeed washed. But let's start with this question from BillyMiz311 on Twitter, who asks, Justice Winslow, extend now or roll the dice? And so I think by roll the dice, he means risk him leaving next summer if they don't extend him when he'll enter restricted free agency next summer. And like we saw with guys like Jabari Parker and Kyle Anderson for the Spurs, there is risk in letting these guys, you know, enter that restricted free agency market. And a lot of times these markets lately have been a little unpredictable. And a lot of times there is a risk in that in letting those guys walk away for nothing, which was the case for Milwaukee and Jabari Parker. And really the Spurs didn't get anything in return for Kyle Anderson. Those are two players that they had something invested in somewhat and didn't get anything in return. Now both of those guys are playing for different teams. So David, where do you stand on this? Because there's a lot of things to consider.
Yeah, I tried thinking of it from two different perspectives, one an on-court one and then an off-court one. And from the on-court perspective, it makes absolute sense to bring him back. I mean, he's still young enough and I think poised for a breakout where he can continue to contribute at a high level. I think we saw, at least I personally saw enough in the playoffs to have me encouraged. I know some longtime listeners will probably remember that I was a little down on Winslow, but I've seen his progress. I'm more confident of him being a more capable playmaker and shooter going forward. And I think I that edge that we saw in the playoffs is enough for me to think that maybe he can be the kind of player, if not necessarily one to build around, but at least to be a key role player in the future. So, from that perspective, I think you absolutely want to re-sign him to a longer-term deal so that you can have him on there so you can continue to watch that growth, because I think he does have the potential. He has the size, the speed, and the athleticism, I think, to continue playing at a high level. Now, there's limitations there. Who knows if that shooting that we saw improve last year will continue to develop or trend upwards, but I think it's the beginnings of something, so you want to have that locked in for as long as you possibly can. Now, as far as the off-the-court perspective, it's tricky, and I think you can roll the dice, and I think there isn't any necessarily harm and any necessarily a negative factor to that, because we also saw, despite the cases that you listed, we saw a number of players who entered restricted free agency, and I think there are still some out there that got really bad deals, ones that we would have considered low for their overall value. I mean, you look at a player like Julius Randle, he didn't get a lot of money in free agency. Probably less than Winslow would get if he was signed to an extension from Miami. So I think you can take a chance that Winslow is still unknown, an unknown factor, and that you're not necessarily confident in that shooting. I mean, unless he takes a huge leap next season, I think you can take a chance and you can say, well, you know what, we'd rather see what happens. Maybe you can acquire a superstar. Maybe there's a midseason trade for a player like Butler that changes everything, and you wait as long as you possibly can before having to make that decision. You give him the qualifying offer, and then you see what happens, and hopefully a lot of teams don't come biting. And I don't know that there will be a lot of teams with that much cap space where they can afford to throw $20 million or more at a player like Justice Winslow. And I mean, I'm talking annually. What happened with Parker, I think, is a fluke. I mean, you know, the Chicago Bulls, I think, made a mistake in throwing that much money at Parker. As much as I like Parker as a player, he's limited defensively. He's limited at the position they're looking to play him. He's probably going to have to play the small forward position where he's better suited for the four. And I think he's a much better scorer.
There is some risk in that with Winslow, though, right? Because Miami, just like Milwaukee didn't really figure out how to use Jabari Parker, and a lot of that was because he was injured so often, so he wasn't really on the court as much. And he ended up taking a backseat to Giannis, and they didn't really know how to use him to be most effective. and that kind of goes to your, like, is he a three, is he a four? They didn't know, and that's very similar to the Justice Winslow situation. If Miami goes through another season of just playing Winslow at every position, not really committing to anything, and allowing him to develop the way he needs to develop, I could see Winslow just, like Jabari Parker, kind of angling his way to get out of there, and that's a big question. I think the pros to giving Justice Winslow an extension, right? You have him under control for the foreseeable future, and if you give him the Josh Richardson extension, which was 4 years, $41 million, or about $10.2 million a year on average, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have him under control at that number, and at least you know that. And then Barry Jackson, in a recent piece, asked one general manager in Las Vegas, and that GM put the Winslow number at closer to $9 million a year. Right. So if it's $9 million a year, I think that's a great bargain for the Heat, and there's the potential for Winslow to outperform that contract, which is ultimately what you want. And a lot of people, we debated the Josh Richardson contract when it happened at the start of last season. We're like, that's kind of a big number for a guy who's relatively unproven. And over the course of the season, that started to look more and more like a bargain for Miami. That the same thing could happen with Justice Winslow. Now the cons, right? You can't trade him. You mentioned that earlier. You can't trade him if you sign him to an extension. For this season. If they sign him this season to an extension, he cannot be traded until the next league year, which means that you can't, if somebody like a Jimmy Butler, a Kawhi Leonard, or, you know, name a superstar randomly comes available, Winslow won't be part of that deal. He can't be. So Miami would have to use other assets in order to make that happen. And for a team that doesn't have a lot of assets, that's, you kind of want to have that luxury. And then, of course, there's the cap situation. They'll be well over the cap next year. If they extend him, they'd be at $128 million in total contracts. That's without Wayne Ellington. That's without Dwayne Wade, potentially, without Udonis Haslam, potentially, or whoever else they want to bring back that's currently expiring. That's $128 million in the books. The cap is $109 million. The tax, I think, is $133 million. So they're really close to that tax. Everything, with all that said, I'd still extend him. I don't risk it, it comes down, really, the main question is, what do they think of Justice Winslow? And they were very high on Josh Richardson, which is why they gave him the contract. They believe that he can outperform that. If Miami thinks that Justice Winslow is part of the future of Miami, part of the solution, I think you extend him because you want to have him under a contract that is of value. Because right now Miami has so many contracts. They have so many guys who are probably never going to perform up to their contract. Sure. So that makes getting guys on those lower contracts who can outperform them so much more important. And Winslow, to me, is that guy. I mean, we've talked... Didn't we rank Winslow ahead of both Bam and Josh Richardson as far as overall ceiling goes? I think we still believe that. I'm really high on Justice Winslow. You've gotten much more optimistic about his growth potential. I think they got to do it. I really don't think that they can risk it, especially because if they butcher another Justice Winslow season, which I think they kind of did last year until the playoffs...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that he would come back, and that kind of begs the next question here is, if they offer him $9 million a year, I don't think he would take it. If they offer him the Josh Richardson extension, I think it's a questionable if he would take it. If I'm Justice Winslow, I might decide to just bet on myself and say, you know what, you might be offering me $10 to $11 million a year. I'm going to turn that down because I think I could do better. Nobody's talking about that option. That is certainly on the table.
See, I think that's ridiculous, though. I mean, I can't see him making more money than that in the open market. He just doesn't seem like that kind of player at this point who can generate that kind of offense on a consistent basis. I mean, obviously he plays defense at a very high level. You want that kind of versatility, but I think there are limitations there as far as his explosion and finishing at the rim, whether or not he's able to, you know, to be a high level scorer at the rim. I mean, obviously he has that first step, so I think there's potential there. But I think there's also limitations, and as far as that shooting is concerned, I think he doesn't make that if he's more consistent.
If he doesn't make that productivity this season, though, could he leave and then, like, it might not be a bet on himself this year. It might be a bet on himself next year. Take a one-year deal elsewhere because he's like, look, sure. I've been in Miami for 4 years. They've never figured out how to use me. I'd rather just leave because if it's just going to be me coming off the bench behind James Johnson over every year, I'm just going to leave anyway and maybe go somewhere else who does know how to use me and then make my money on my next on that contract after that.
His hometown team could certainly use a wing player like him.
They would know how to use them. They've got a role right there that Trevor Ariza just vacated.
Did we just call Winslow to the Rockets for next season on a 1 year deal?
Makes a lot of sense, which is why I don't want Winslow to leave, and I think Miami should extend him. I really do. And just I think he should be the last guy that Miami includes in a Jimmy Butler or Kawhi Leonard or superstar X trade too. Because I'm all in on his ceiling. I think he's just a player you kind of need in today's game.
If you have to trade Winslow to get Butler, would you do it?
Yeah, but yeah, I would.
I think we're seeing this on the flip side from the Lakers fan perspective. I think they're ridiculously clinging to guys like Brandon Ingram and Josh Hart and others on that team. Kyle Kuzma.
That makes sense more for the Lakers because they have LeBron. Like, they already have the superstar, and you sort of want to build something around him. Like, I get it. Like, I wouldn't cling on to Kuzma, but like I understand trying to hold on to Lonzo Ball for one more year. And if you don't really know what Kawhi is going to be. I would rather, we've talked about this on the show, I would rather have Jimmy Butler than Kawhi Leonard at this point, just because you know what you're getting. Yep. And then there's the ability to recruit with him, which we don't know that Kawhi has. But I would, if I'm the Heat, I'm calling up Minnesota, I'm saying Josh Richardson for Jimmy Butler straight up.
Oof.
And I think that would be a slam dunk trade for Minnesota, to be honest. But anyway, we can talk about that later. One listener sent in an interesting lineup idea, and we'll talk about that after this quick break. Back with Locked On Heat, Pat Riley has come under a lot of criticism this summer, and we'll talk about if it's warranted later on. But let's go to this question from Billy, who writes in, can a Dion Waiters, Wayne Ellington, Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow, and Bam Adebayo lineup make a poor/broke man's version of the Hamptons 5 in Golden State? Outside of Ellington, that's a strong defensive unit who have three-point range, and everyone can initiate some on offense. I will also take inserting Dragic for Bam and Winslow at the five for a super small lineup, like what they do with Draymond at the five, I suppose. So the Hamptons five. He calls it the South Beach five. What do you think?
The name sounds okay. I mean, I can.
The name's great.
I like it. I like it. I just, as far as the lineup is concerned, I don't know that he offers an interesting option there with replacing Winslow, or having Adebayo replaced by Winslow and then having Dragic in the lineup. Cause I think you kind of need a little bit more offense than you've got there. Mm-hmm. And I like Winslow's playmaking ability over what Bam can provide it. I mean, Bam's a good, well, we saw flashes of him being a good ball handler in the summer league. And I think hopefully that'll translate. Where do you stand on this lineup? Because I'm kind of torn. I like it, but at the same time, I'm kind of torn that it's going to be prolific enough to actually run guys off the floor.
I'd almost take... I think the idea here is that Waiters and Ellington in the backcourt could sort of be your off-the-dribble three-point shooters. I'm not... Ellington, to me, is more...
Can he duplicate what Clay does in Golden State?
On offense, he could. New Clay, like with Kevin Durant Clay, who's basically been relegated to the Ray Allen role. I mean, he won't be as good at it, but he can't post up like old Clay had to do before Durant showed up. Waiters can't really do that. None of these guys can really post up. Richardson does it a little bit here and there, and you could tell like he's taking some lessons from D-Wade.
Yeah.
Towards the end of the season, we saw flashes of it. Bam, there's interesting playmaking ability there. I mean, if they wanted to just go all in and grow, this could be a way to do it. There's an argument to be made that you could put Dragic in there instead of Waiters, because at least I think Dragic actually gives you a little bit more off the dribble shooting than Waiters does. Waiters is more of a slash and kick guy and kind of creates for his own in more of the mid range than I think the 3-point range. And we've seen Dragic really step up and just literally and be able to create his own 3-point shots, which kind of gives it the Steph Curry effect. But there's nobody. The thing with the Hamptons five that makes it work is two guys really, and it's Steph Curry and Andre Iguodala. You could argue that maybe Josh Richardson could be Miami's version of Andre Iguodala, but there's nobody on this roster that even resembles anything that Curry could do. So I'd almost flip this and say, and kind of echo an idea that you've had out there, that you've put out there a couple times, play Winslow at point guard. If you can't do what Steph Curry can do, and there's nobody on this roster that can even get close to it, you have to find a different advantage, and Justice Winslow at point guard gives almost the opposite advantage where, yeah, maybe offensively he doesn't give you shooting, but you got to guard him because he's going to have the ball in his hands. You can't ignore him. And then defensively, he's able to pick up and shut down essentially any point guard in the league, you know, theoretically, because he's such a good defender and because he's so big. And then if you play like a Winslow, Ellington, Richardson, Olynyk, Bam lineup, you have some more offense with Olynyk. You can, depending on the front court matchup, switch out Bam and Olynyk on different front court matchups. I think Olynyk can give you enough defense to hold his own on the weaker of the two opposing front court guys. Again, theoretically, that might be the option there.
Yeah, I kind of tend to think that maybe Dragic does need to be in that lineup, you know, despite his age and everything else. I think you could still have Winslow in there and then have Goran play off the ball. And Waiters needs to be a part of it. If anything, I might take out Ellington, to be honest with you. I know his three-point shooting makes them much more lethal. But at the same time, I mean, you know, Dragic is a pretty solid three-point shooter, and I think that's going to be consistent next year as well. And if you're going for a more versatile – look, obviously you're never going to be able to duplicate what Golden State does, nor the quality of shooting that they offer. So if anything, you can offer just a much more versatile lineup that still has some potency on offense. I don't know. I guess it could come down to either Waiters or Ellington, and you give up a lot of versatility on defense, but you make up for that with the prolific three-point shooting, so you keep Ellington in there. But yeah,
I almost think we're overthinking it. I think, like, just who are the five most versatile players on the roster and just put them on the court at the same time?
That includes Waiters. I mean, that's for sure.
It does include Waiters, you're right, and it doesn't include Ellington.
No.
So it kind of gets to what you're saying, but Ellington's three-point shooting is so important that you almost have to have him out there. I mean, it's so important. We saw so many times, we saw the evidence of that last season.
What if it's Derrick Jones Jr.? What if he finally has that I mean, with that length, I mean, that's the enticing part of it. What we saw in Summer League, what, you know, we got a chance to talk to him about, it was that if he has that kind of consistent shooting touch, with that length and a little bit more athleticism that we've seen him put on in muscle, You lose a little playmaking ability, but man, there's some potential there as a great defender because he can poke the ball out from a ball handler. He can initiate a fast break offense. If he can, you know, go out to the 3-point line and knock it down consistently, you'd want that length out there as well. So, I mean, that's.
So what about like Derrick Jones Jr., Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow, Bam Adebayo, and then at point guard you have either Waiters or Dragic?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you think about, I mean, we kind of focus on what Golden State's able to do offensively, but defensively is really what makes that unit so potent. And it's just because all five guys can switch. And if Miami's just taking the five guys who could switch, that's kind of it. And we're not even talking about James Johnson, who is really good defensively and really good at switching.
Yeah, we could have do something with, maybe we are overthinking this, but James Johnson, Winslow. You could go with like a big versatile lineup almost where you have Waiters as a ball handler and then just all the rest of those guys out there. I mean, that would be an interesting one as well. Whew.
Thanks
a lot, Billy.
Winslow.
We could spend a whole episode on this one.
Waiters, Winslow, Josh Richardson, James Johnson, and Bam. Or take out the point guard and do like Winslow at point guard, Richardson, Ellington, or James Johnson, and Bam.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually like that lineup a lot. That's big. That's versatile. Really,
I think Miami should
defensively.
Miami should go bigger, not smaller, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're at that point. Yeah, a lot of things to do, but one thing we can agree on, the South Beach 5, I'm in. The South Beach 305, it's a little... No,
too complicated.
Not 300, there's not 305 players on the court. It doesn't make sense. Should Pat Riley be willing to take smaller bad contracts for Miami's bigger bad contracts? We'll talk about that when we come back after this break. Back with Locked On Heat, let's get to our final mailbag questions. This first one comes from Josh, who asks, why is Pat Riley unwilling to take pennies on the dollar for some of these long-term contracts? Is it important for us to get our young guys as many minutes as possible next season? So there's an interesting... I think the background concept here is that there are trades available where Miami could essentially get rid of Hassan Whiteside and James Johnson and Deion Waiters, who I think are the three contracts that people talk about most when it comes to clearing, and Tyler Johnson. Those four contracts, to clear those four contracts would make room for Josh Richardson, Justice Winslow, and Bam Adebayo, not to mention make room on the salary cap. The pennies on the dollar thing, there's this idea that they could just trade these contracts for worse contracts, for worse players. I still don't think the Tyler Johnson contract is touchable, not the way he played last season. Whiteside, maybe you can get somebody, but I just don't know who the team is at this point. Portland, Washington, Milwaukee, those were kind of the three teams. Sacramento, those were kind of the four teams that we kind of talked about a lot. They've all answered their questions at center. I don't see what it's going to be out there.
Although the Kings initiating a trade today as we're recording this, you know, maybe they're clearing cap space, hopefully to acquire a Hassan Whiteside set.
I just don't see it.
Yeah, no, neither do I. I'm wishful thinking. Putting it out there to the universe and hoping Vladdy Divac listens.
So, he's not going to get a bad expiring contract because that's a good contract. So either way, they're still going to have money. But I think the idea would be like a a Whiteside for, let's say, Ayaan Mahinmi, right, from Washington, a guy who can't even get on the floor for them. So he's a worse player on a smaller bad contract.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You could so argue
that's the concept of taking pennies on the dollar is to get somebody. You're going to get a bad contract regardless, but at least he's a player who's unplayable so that you can focus on the young guys as much as possible.
Like, Whiteside, you have to play. Mahinmi, you can just let him ride the bench for the rest of his life. He won't care. He's just bringing in $17 million a year, $18 million a year. That's far less than the $25 to $27 that Whiteside will be making the next couple of years. So, there's a very good argument to be made that the Heat should do that. What do you think?
I don't think so. I think you play who you've got as much as you possibly can. And I think, look, ultimately, Hassan could be worth playing a larger amount of time than we saw last year. We saw those minutes dwindle because his performance dwindled. I think it's commensurate with the level of play. And so that's the case. If he's going to be a better product out there, if he's going to be a better, more complete, all-around player, he'll get the minutes. The fact that he didn't get the minutes was more indicative of how badly he played. So I think you want the best options out there. And I still think that Hassan, an engaged version of Hassan, is still a better option than giving Bam Adebayo, still very raw, 25-plus minutes per game. Like, I think you're going to lose a lot of games by focusing on giving these young guys a lot more time than they're getting at this point. I mean, like, Richardson already plays a lot. He starts, for crying out loud. I mean, I don't know how much more playing time he can possibly get. So Justice, maybe you've yanked him around a little bit too much, but you haven't found quite the ideal place for him. And with that glut at the guard position, I don't know that he's going to get more playing time than he does next year. And I just don't see where you can carve out these extra minutes for players, to be honest with you.
To me, it's, look, there is a glut of guards, and maybe you're able to move Josh Richardson to the two, and we're going to talk about that in the second part of the mailbag, is the value of doing that. But that, to me, would be the move. I'm kind of with you, to be honest. I mean, you and I have been – I would trade Whiteside if I could for something, but it's just not on the table anymore. And I kind of agree with Pat Riley to sort of take the long-term view here in that there is – like, his value can't get worse than it is right now. So why not roll the dice and play some, see what he does at DBC Fitness, see how he remakes his body, see what he does this season, and maybe his value climbs higher. There is this sort of belief that a team has to be done by the time the regular season starts. They have until, like, the Cavaliers got to the finals after completely reshaping the roster at the trade deadline. You can wait until the trade deadline to finish making this roster. So I think Riley is taking the long view right now, and I appreciate that. I think he sees that there is an opportunity to create more value out of guys like Tyler Johnson and Whiteside, and hopefully that's what happens. And if not, just make the same trade if that's even on the table, because right now he's not willing to take it if you believe reports. If he calls up Washington and says Mahinmi for Whiteside at the trade deadline because we got to get under the luxury tax, well, then maybe he does it then, but he doesn't have to do it now. This next question comes from Kyle, who writes in, summer 2014, we were all shouting in Riley we trust. Now I see people complaining about Riley, saying he's washed. I understand we're not contending anytime soon, but looking back, I felt Riley made the right moves at the time. What are your thoughts on Riley?
Yeah, that's a loaded question there. Mm-hmm. I think summer 2014 is an unusual case because, you know, the departure of LeBron really messed up everyone, including the franchise, including Riley. I think, you know, he's spoken about it a number of times, indicating how it was a punch to the gut and no one knew how to respond, but they immediately did, or as soon as they possibly could, they recovered, they moved on, and they were able to do some great things. Look, I think, you know, we're talking about a very different Heat group right now if one thing happens, and that's if Chris Bosh stays healthy, right? I think that was such an incredible move when it happened in 2014. He'd still be under contract. He'd be entering the last year of his deal right now as a all-star Hall of Fame type player that changes the dynamic of this Heat team. You can rebuild differently if Chris is healthy. Unfortunately, that just wasn't in the cards, and he hasn't been part of this roster. It seems like ages ago, but we're talking about two seasons ago where we still hoped that he might be able to come back and contribute. He was so good.
He was so damn good.
You changed how you don't have to sign James Johnson because you've already got one of the best, most versatile forward centers of all time.
You don't have to sign Kelly Olynyk. You're probably not in the lottery. You don't draft Bam Adebayo.
Right. Who knows what happened?
His shooting makes room for Justice Winslow at the three. I mean, it's just, he was so good.
He was.
I'm going to go back after we're recording this and just go back and watch Chris Bosh highlights. You made me dreamy. Well, and I think the other part of that, too, is that you mentioned LeBron leaving. And in that press conference, before LeBron left, Pat Riley talked about the San Antonio Spurs as a team that stays together, sticks together if they've got the guts, blah, 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 that whole speech. But the real, the meat of that was he wants a team that maybe doesn't win every year, but sticks together and has a chance every year. Yeah. And you can kind of see that that's what he built here.
Yeah.
Theoretically, right? Like, he signed all those guys to one-year deals, and they played, they outperformed their contracts. They played to a point where they were greater than the sum of its parts, and I think he just really appreciated that and just said, you know what? If we're not going to contend necessarily, if we're not going to be, if we're not going to have LeBron and make the finals, and if we're not going to be this up-and-coming Warriors team or Rockets team or whatever, let's just put something together, because I'm sick of doing this every year, and I just want to put something together here that has a chance to grow together and outperform and just get better every year. That didn't necessarily happen, and of course the Chris Bosh thing is a huge part of that. And look, the only thing with Riley that I think he really made a mistake on was the length of the contracts, and then signing a guy like Hassan Whiteside to the and failing to see where the league was going and understanding that just big plotting centers, regardless of how dominant of a rebounder or shot blocker they are, just really didn't have a place at that kind of value in this league. And then, of course, matching the Tyler Johnson contract, which was completely ridiculous at the time, everybody knew it.
You see, I think lost in that whole Tyler Johnson thing, I think, is that it came right on the heels of Dwayne Wade's departure, and you risk alienating the franchise even further by just letting him walk.
But you can't pay a guy $19 million in any season.
But Tyler was such like a blue-collar hero.
Two wrongs don't make a right, you know? I feel like that's a failure on Riley's part. Like, if he deals with some criticism, fine. But, like, Riley has earned just like Danny Ainge in Boston is able to trade Isaiah Thomas because he just has, like, the unquestionable trust of the fan base. And, look, there's a fraction of Heat Twitter that hates on Pat Riley all the time, but overall, he has got complete ownership and backing, or complete backing of ownership. Like, he is not at risk to lose that job. He is never going to get fired. It doesn't matter what he does.
That's a good point.
And so with that, he shouldn't just cave to
those
kind of
things. He could take more chances, right?
He could take more chances. Let Tyler Johnson walk. Let the Brooklyn Nets pay him. It's fine.
Yeah,
That was a bad contract. But those are just a couple of things. The Whiteside and the Tyler Johnson are the only egregious things in my book. Everything else is defensible, and like you said, a lot of it is reactionary to the Chris Bosh thing, and that was a huge part of this.
Yeah, there's a lot of context that doesn't go into place when you start to kind of rehash those moves,
yeah.
And I think we forget about that. Now, I will say, and I've written about this before, I've been critical of Riley because I do think at this point in time, he is out of touch with how to appeal to players.
Yeah.
Like, I think we saw evidence as far back as the late 80s. I mean, we tend to forget about this, but he was effectively fired by the Los Angeles Lakers. As great as that relationship is with Magic Johnson, who he refers to, you know, one of the few people that refers to Magic as Irvin because of the closeness of the relationship, Irvin Johnson wanted Pat Riley's ass fired, and he was okay with you know, Dr. Jerry Buss eventually letting Riley go. So it made it seem like, I've read about this, it wasn't quite a firing. It was more of a, we're not going to renew your contract. The same way Frank Vogel's contract wasn't renewed by the Indiana Pacers. But they let him go. I mean, he had burned himself out, constantly challenging players, constantly pushing them like this. It wears on you. It grates on you. The same way that now we see, in a smaller sense, LeBron James and that kind of personality is grating and taxing. I think Riley's the same way. So I think he's forgotten how to connect with players on a basis like that.
And that's obvious in the failed free agency pitches since LeBron left, right? I mean, he really hasn't acquired a single big-time free agent since LeBron left.
Yeah, I mean, I think he still gets his name, his foot in the door because of his name, because of the cachet attached to his name. But I just don't know that he's talking, you know, one-on-one with Gordon Hayward, and I don't know that he knows how to appeal to him other than saying, you can come here and work and work and work and become the superstar player that you're supposed to be. And Gordon Hayward just wants to, you know, have a baby boy with his wife, and instead, he goes off to Boston where he can be just one of a team that's much more deep and versatile than the
Brad Stevens has a reputation as a player-friendly coach. I mean, he's a cerebral coach, but he's not a taskmaster by any means. He's player-friendly, and he's got that relationship, obviously, with Gordon. And then Kevin Durant decided to go to Golden State in
a very different group, right?
It's an organization built on being player-friendly, built on having your freedom of movement, and that's not necessarily what Miami has built, for better or worse. And there's a lot of better, and then there's some worse. But
yeah, there's countless stories of Riley, even as far back as his late, his Lakers tenure, not wanting wives and family members to travel with the teams. You think about that. You think about LeBron potentially having signed in Los Angeles because of the strength of his family and because of the allure of that city for his family. And it just, it contradicts everything that Riley's about, where you should have a singular, constant focus only on basketball. I don't think that that's the way that players today respond anymore. That's just not the case. Like, they work hard, they can work hard 24 hours at their, you know, they can work hard during the off season, but at some point they need a little bit of a respite from that. And I don't know that Riley takes that into consideration. But overall, to go back to Kyle's question, I mean, Pat Riley is the soul of this franchise. He's created a culture here. You can't understate that. And I think that there is league-wide appeal and respect for it, even amongst the players. So
I dislike the "in Riley we trust" thing, though, because I think that just gets to dangerous dictatorship kind of levels, and I know. Just look, he's here. He's always going to be here until he decides not to be. But I'm not one of these people who just also blindly follow whatever he's doing. I don't think that there's some master plan that he's already created to get another big three. And I think in Riley we trust conglomerate is under that belief.
Hasn't he also built a good team around him, though, that I think, like, he's learned how to listen to their opinions and respect what they have to offer?
That's a really good point, because you look at a guy like Andy Ellsberg, who is one of the best cap guys in the NBA, a guy like Shane Battier, who is already being poached only a couple of years into his position by other, like by the Detroit Pistons for higher jobs, and he stays with Miami. Eric Spoelstra, one of the great coaching stories in the league. If anything, like, I'm glad you said that, because the roster is what the roster is. But it's a great organization that Pat Riley has built, and he deserves a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's great that he at least has, while he might seem rigid in many ways, at least there's some flexibility there. I can never forget about the fact that, you know, if it were up to him, the Heat would have drafted Chris Kaman in 2003, and because he had enough people around him saying Dwayne Wade is probably a better option, that he eventually went with the surefire Hall of Famer.
And at least he listened to him, right? I mean, there's something to that. All right, well, that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening. As always, you can reach us by email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or on Twitter by using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Support the show by visiting our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.